keep it alive. Through these lines I write, I keep it live, cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah. Just nod your head with it, so explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it, no scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool, hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so, no overdose cause it's dope. Yo man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow, down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursue.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio Show. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV and the antimedia.org/radio. You could also just click on the radio tab. And you can also follow up if you miss a show, if you want to go back and listen to our show, our last show, or the shows from last week or last year, whatever. You can go on YouTube, on UCY TV YouTube channel, and look at all of our old shows, because some of them are, you know, very interesting. And, you know, we're talking about topics that start at one point and end at another point, so we can't cover all the ground in one show. And, you know, our show is only an hour long, and we're talking about extending it to 2 hours because, you know, we always run out of time for the things that we really want to talk about. You know, we can only cover so much ground, but you know, we do what we can in this 1 hour we have. We had an awesome guest, a couple awesome guests last week, and you know, we're going to be working towards that. There's just so much news tonight that we're just not going to be able to have a guest on tonight. We'll take a few callers, nothing too long, because a lot of things are going on. My longtime co-host, DB Schwartz, is joining us on the call. What's up, DB?
Hey, man, not much, dude. Just every day a little bit more perplexed that we allow some evil people to get away with things. Talking about the congressman who only got a 15-month stint for molesting a bunch of children. So same day that another guy got 30 years for pot. That's where we're at.
That's
right now.
That's crazy, right? And, you know, this congressman, he's sitting there molested who knows how many children, and 15 months? I mean, that's insane.
In minimum security, too. You know what I mean? Like club fed, where he's not in danger of having the same thing he did happen to him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, man. I mean, that's ridiculous. And you know what? They're worried about, you know, things happening. And they're like in North Carolina, they're banning bathrooms, which is, you know, banning certain people from using certain bathrooms. And now, of course, this has become a national media narrative, and also, dare I say, a media frenzy on this, you know, bathroom law. And this one, that's
and they're using these media events as false correlation, Nick, which is like equating people who are transgendered as people that are perverted,
yeah,
or pedophiles, which is completely different and not even.
It's not the case.
Yeah, you can't do. It's like when they said, "Well, if we legalize gay marriage, then what next? It's okay to marry a goat or a kid." No, we understand. There's an inherent understanding of what's evil and wrong, and what's personal choice, and nothing wrong with it. You're not hurting your other people.
Yeah, there was some douchebag down in Texas that was trying to marry his laptop so that they could nullify the same-sex marriage laws down there. I mean, people go to great lengths, man. And, you know, you got all these people now on social media. And, DB, you brought up that former Speaker of the House that was sentenced to 15 months in jail for what he did to a bunch of kids. And people are saying, oh, well, if we allow this, you know, transgender people to use the restroom that they identify with, well, then, you know, kids are going to get, you know, raped. And someone brought up a good point, is that there's been more politicians and people from Congress that have been charged with sexual misconduct inside of bathrooms than transgender people have. And I tell you what, there's a lot more transgender people out there than there are members of Congress.
And the simple fix, Nick, is just family bathrooms. I mean, damn.
Yeah, I mean, porta potties had that issue figured out like decades ago, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, as long as there's singular bathrooms where there's not room and stalls where people could feasibly do things to other people, then you don't need to worry about it. And maybe there needs to be a bathroom revolution in America where we all finally have privacy.
Real, occupy the toilet. In fact, that's an actual movement going on now. I think it's one of these.
I'm all for it.
But, you know, this thing has really turned into a media frenzy. And then a bunch of people that have no clue what transgender people are or anything about sexuality and stuff are chiming in, and they're like, oh, my daughter is not going to be peeing in some stall next to some guy, you know. And another funny post I saw was that there were this post of these two transgender men that were born as women that are like, you know, really buff, like really masculine dudes. And it's like, do you, with that new law, these dudes are going to be peeing in there with your daughter. You understand that, right? You know, it's just, oh man, it's just so ridiculous.
It's not going to allow somebody to be in there like with a full on video camera and shit. Like the things people are worried about are still fully illegal.
Yeah, I mean, the twisted shit that goes on in people's heads. Anyway, we've also got the amazing journalist Claire Bernish on the line. What's up, Claire?
Not much. What's going on?
Oh, hanging in there. Just, you know, dealing with the circumstances that we have here. Are the reason we bring up this bathroom thing is what we used for the promo meme here. And you know, funny thing. A lot of the quote-unquote conservatives are the ones that are getting behind this, you know, bathroom law or whatever. The meme that we put up, it's criminals won't obey gun-free zone signs, but they sure as hell will obey a bathroom sign. I mean, it's so dumb. It's like, really, like, you're gonna, you know, changing the bathroom sign is gonna, you know, stop criminals from being perverts, or is it going to make regular people become perverts? I mean, is that what they're trying to say? I mean,
and if it emboldens a pervert, so be it. So he gets caught and goes to jail, right?
I mean, it's so ridiculous. Claire, what do you make of all this?
Transgender people have been using the bathroom they identify with forever. So suddenly implementing a law like this is it's just asinine. It makes no sense whatsoever. Like, you brought up the picture of, like, the burly-looking man and stuff. I mean, there are all sorts of pictures coming out of people who just look like – I mean, they're normal people. They just happen to be now a different gender than when they were born. And I don't think that all these paranoid people, they just don't understand, and they're not bothering to educate themselves either, and that's kind of a problem.
And what are they going to do, walk in the bathroom and, like, grab your junk and check and make sure, or what? I mean, what are, like, literally, exactly. What are they going to do? How are they going to enforce this? I saw a video – it was posted over on Countercurrent News, and it's hard to tell exactly, but according to the narration that was going on, it was like this younger lesbian girl that was, you know, pretty much dressed up as a guy or whatever, but she was like kicked out of a bathroom because she looked too boyish. I mean, it was just crazy, man. The shit that's going on here. I mean, there's a damn guy got beat up by an off-duty cop outside of Walmart because they accused him of stealing a tomato, and then he spent 3 days in jail for it. Turns out that he actually had the receipt, and he didn't even steal it. Like, they didn't even bother asking for the receipt before they started beating him up. I mean, what in the hell? And you know, the problem that we have right now, apparently the biggest problem is, oh, we got to make sure transgender people are you know, using the bathroom that they're of the sex they're assigned with at birth. I mean, this is a big joke. I mean, it's a total distraction. I mean, it's ridiculous. And the arguments don't hold any weight. I mean, it's just like, okay, guys, this is dumb. This is ridiculous. It's time to, like...
It's going to actually create more violence, more problems, you know, more issues for everybody involved. It's just, it really is a distraction, but it's also really dangerous, and it just proves that really, why do we need the government in the bathroom?
Seriously, I mean, take the government out of the bedroom, take them out of the bathroom, take them out of our bank accounts, hopefully, too, maybe.
The answer to all of this, too, is just privacy. Like, right. Leave people alone, give people separate, decent facilities that are not open air where there's a possibility of any of this happening.
Oh, so many things that are just ridiculous right now, man. I swear, it's just crazy.
It's almost like they're trying to distract us from something that might be happening in November. I don't know.
Yeah, I know. Doesn't it seem like there's something going on here? oh, man. Let's see. We got plenty of ground to cover tonight. The elections, first of all. I mean, it's...
The selections?
The selection, yeah. The selections. 2016 selections for president. Looks like it's pretty much come down to Trump versus Clinton. And now this is a dynamic that we've been talking about for a while now. And let's dig into Hillary Clinton, first of all. We just found out that... Claire, you actually wrote an article on this that... Clinton and Trump were sharing the same tax dodging address over in Delaware, and that's pretty big news. That was our top story.
So they're a couple?
Well,
they might as well be.
This is one of those addresses that you share where Bill Clinton knows about it, and he's probably not. Well, then again, he probably wouldn't give a shit anyway if she was cheating on him. But you know, the fact of the matter is he's probably happy about this address sharing because it helps him save a lot of money in taxes. Clinton walking around telling people, oh, you know, we got to make these rich people, these one percenters, which coincidentally, she happens to be a one percenter because she's a multimillionaire, and most 99% of the people in this country aren't.
Did you see that the Clinton Foundation's worth $2
billion? Wow. That's crazy. No, I didn't, but it's
so not- there's some laundering.
Yeah, and so she's got this account. Claire wrote about it. What can you tell us about this Delaware thing? I know we already touched on it last show a little bit, but I just want to point out that people are electing this monster.
Yeah, I mean, this is like supposedly it's a legal tax loophole because Delaware is a very it's a very good state for businesses. They have a lot of like corporate secrecy and stuff like that written into their laws. So. Plenty of corporations use Delaware as a kind of legal tax haven. And so the thing is with this, though, there are the possibilities that people could be using it in a shady way, and it would be very difficult to trace. So Clinton and Trump are both using this address that they share with 285,000 other companies. It's just this little two-story residence, from what I understand. And you know, that's fine and good. And Trump kind of takes responsibility. He's like, yeah, I use it. It helps my business. I save money, whatever. So I really don't have a problem with that. But Clinton's like going around and moralizing, you know, and then using this. And then also her spokesperson said, well, she doesn't benefit from using this address. It's like just she's just compounding the problem and just sounding more and more like a liar and kind of like morally hollow by the moment.
Thurl, that's not even her main one. I mean, haven't you heard of our foundation in Haiti? I mean,
bro,
well, in Panama, you know.
Other accounts, come on. So anyway, you know, do as I say, not as I do is the name of the game, I guess, with Clinton. It's like, hey, guys, everyone, we got to make these rich people pay their taxes, but you know, I'll avoid mine as best way I can. So that's a big problem. Trump basically swept the Northeast. There were five states that voted yesterday. Trump swept. Clinton won 4 of 5, and the only one that Sanders won was the little tiny state of Rhode Island, which doesn't really do it.
Connecticut was close, too.
It was close. So,
and you forgot that Cruz chose Carly Fiorina as his VP.
Oh, yeah. I saw this hilarious article from the Berowitz Report, which is this satire page on the New Yorker. Where it said Cruz was tapping into the wild popularity of Carly Fiorina, who dropped out. She was running for president. She dropped out a long time ago. Very unpopular, not very likable. She very much is like a Hillary Clinton type of candidate in many ways. just very not likable, but has, you know, I guess there's certain aspects that are good about her, the CEO.
She's got mad sex appeal in there.
Yeah, and she's very rich and stuff, and, you know, I don't know. I don't know what to make of that. I mean, Ted Cruz is pretty much done anyway, you know.
He was done when he ate that booger.
Yeah, when he ate the booger, I mean, he pretty much lost everyone's, you know, support. No more credibility when you get caught eating boogers. oh, man, this election has been a wild ride. And, you know, it's going to, you know, probably come down to Trump versus Hillary. It's Hillary is very much has a track record of being, you know, on the wrong side of history on many, many issues. So I don't know what to make of it. I think that now this election is the time to send a message. It's not, you know, now, you know, seeing what it's amounted to and, you know, let's face it, even if Bernie did pull out a crazy win in California, I mean, the entire system is going up against the guy, you know, so his chances for the Democratic nomination are pretty much gone. I think the thing that
he already did his damage, though, like he split the youth vote.
And that's why I think the thing to do now on that aspect of things would be to try to get Bernie to run third party, man, would be a huge, huge message to be sent. And maybe he can join up with Jill Stein and run on that ticket. That would be huge. And even if not, if that's not the case, I think the thing that would be most beneficial this time around is get that protest vote out there, man. You know, don't vote for the third for the two parties. Vote for the third parties, or don't cast a vote at all. Send a message with your vote or with your not vote. That you're not satisfied with this two-party system, dude, that these Republicans and Democrats were tired of, as you said, DB, our presidents being selected and not elected, you know?
Yeah, I mean,
that's about the best analogy, the best choice of words I've heard yet this season.
Yeah, it should just be a selection convention at this point. But, I mean, if we can bring about a third party, especially if the millennials, which are basically all the people in command of all the technology that all the people that are old with the money need, it's going to create this amazing, amazing conflict naturally, and that's what we need.
Yeah, and then, you know, Sanders came out a day or two ago, and he basically, I'm not going to say he supported Obama's use of a secret kill list, but he basically said, yeah, it's legal, and then he basically, I mean, it reinforces what I've been saying for a while and what we've kind of been talking about here on this show is that Sanders is pretty status quo on foreign policy stuff. He's also said that he supports what's going on in Syria, which we know is a big proxy war between the NATO powers and the Eastern Bloc, or whatever you want to call Russia and their allies, China, Iran, and them. You know, and so, you know, that being said, you know, maybe it is time because I think Sanders, I don't think he's going to run third party. I he said that he would back Clinton if that was the case. So when he does, I don't know what his supporters are going to do. I know many, many, many Bernie Sanders supporters have vowed that they would never vote for Hillary Clinton. So when he endorses her, I don't know what they're going to do about that, if they're going to be mad about it or if they're going to be upset or they're just going to be like, okay, well, I guess I'll vote for her or not. I don't know how it's going to play out, but, you know, that's probably what's going to happen. And so I really do think now this election could be a big chance for the third parties to make, maybe not get elected, but make a difference, and maybe start moving into a alternative to these two-party duopoly that we've been seeing for decades and decades. And, you know, we've seen where it's gotten us. It's gotten us nowhere good. Right.
There's already a groundswell for the Progressive Party, because most of the people that are not watching TV and actually on the internet that are Democrats are like, this Democratic Party is the Republican Party. This is just the neocon party. They've merged. So everybody can get that. And I think it's going to make a third party, like a legitimate third party. Now, I don't know what that will do with the way that we run our government, because in 2018, all of the U.S. House of Representatives are coming up, and like a third of the senators. So it's going to be a shift, man, because a lot of these people I'm talking to are way younger than me, and they have a lot of energy, and they have a lot of student debt, and they don't get good jobs, and they have no health care, and they're just pissed. And everybody's just starting to get pissed off and saying, man, I got a lot of time on my hands. I can't get a job. I'm going to go protest. I'm going to go make shit happen. The only way they know how to before the system breaks down.
Yeah, that that brings us up to kind of our next point here is about these millennials, man. And we always get the blame. We always get the short end of the stick. Everyone says we're lazy. Everyone says we're this and we're that. I mean, I don't...
Well, the boomers shouldn't have worked so damn hard and made everything so awesome then.
We got this new research out from the Pew Research Center that talks about the situation that millennials are facing. This is our top aggregated post of the day over on the Anti-Media, coming from Zero Hedge. And just to get to the main details of what the report basically said, millennials in New York are earning about 20% less than the previous generation of workers, and they are absolutely drowning in $14 billion in debt. That's just in New York alone. The average working 23-year-old in New York City earned $23,000 last year compared to $27,000 in 2000. And of course, that's adjusted for inflation. Moving up the age scale a bit, the average 29-year-old, which is what the group I would fall under, because I'm about to be 30, made in 2014 is $50,000 versus $56,000 in 2000. Now, I'm nowhere near that income level, obviously, but it shows, man, the income of millennials has declined greatly. I mean, horribly. I mean, isn't it supposed to go up over time? And like every year, it's like, oh, the economy got better and it grew, and so everyone's supposed to make a little more money. It's like,
or things were just supposed to get a lot cheaper.
Yeah, and like the opposite has happened. So first of all, shit has gotten more expensive. Pretty much everything. My buddy, was having me get him a candy bar from the store the other day, and when I was a kid, they used to be like 50 cents, 60 cents or whatever, and now they're like $2 or $3. And then at the same time, our incomes are going down, and people wonder why, they wonder why someone like Bernie Sanders is like tapping into some kind of youth in revolt. Well, it's because, man, we got no money. We're living paycheck to paycheck. Everything's more expensive. Like millennials, like it's almost impossible to own your own home, to have a place, to raise a family, and all that stuff that our the generations before us, it was easy for them to do all that stuff, and now it's like almost impossible. It's ridiculous.
There's a lot of jumping through hoops now for everything too. It seems like there are like laws on top of laws on top of laws and technicalities and such. I mean, it's just basic living has become really difficult to maneuver through.
Yeah, and all the red tape and all the little permits and all the something not mentioned in this report is that the taxes and all that shit have added up even higher as well from the last generation. You know, so the people here, the regular working class people, are paying more in taxes now for everything, and so it's just a bad recipe for disaster. And everyone blames us, like, oh, you guys are just lazy. You guys just make bad decisions with your education and this, that, and the other. It's like, no, dude, you guys, the generations before us weren't very good stewards of the government. They allowed bad politicians to get elected and reelected and reelected and reelected. I mean, the damn incumbents have like a 90% reelection rate in Congress. I mean, these assholes that keep doing these horrible things keep getting reelected. It's like nobody learns from history. It's like every 4 years they go on campaign and everyone forgets all the bad shit they've done for 4 years.
Nick, what was Machiavelli's rule? Was that it only takes two generations to placate a society. So you had the GI generation get the windfall from World War II, and then their kids, the hippie generation that got all the technological advances, and then that's it, man. Two generations, the voter blocks are complacent. There's no more protests, really. They squashed the real protests, and now that they're trying to build it up, it's kind of like, damn, man, it's 50 years too late.
Yeah, I mean, after World War II, when the United States became a global superpower, and then all those, that generation that came directly after that and a few after that, benefited directly from the growth of the empire, you know, the windfall, the jobs, the manufacturing, the military-industrial complex. And now that empire is in decline, now it's all of us that are having to pay for it. All of the kids of those people that were benefiting from the empire are now the ones that are having to pay for its, you know, shortcomings, I guess you could say. And everyone blames us for all this shit, dude. It's like, dude, man, you really don't see what happened, do you? But you know, you can't blame them too much. They didn't have internet. They didn't have, you know, as much access to information as we did. They, you know, if back in our grandparents' days, if they wanted to research something, they'd have to go down to the library and hope that the book was in stock and hope that they
could. That was my childhood. Now, come on.
Yeah,
I can kind of remember that. And you're right, Nick. I mean, shit, dude, you couldn't figure anything out without making a day out of it.
Yep. And now you can go 20 minutes online and you learn like a bunch of information. And, oh, damn, I didn't know that. You know, and so it's very interesting. It's the reason why Sanders is getting so much support for sure, and it's the reason why Clinton is getting so much flack from pretty much every side, is because she's part of that generation. She is pretty much a lifetime politician that is part of that problem cast.
And one of the absolute nastiest defense attorneys ever, dude. She got off child molesters like day and night, dude.
Ah, man,
you got to dig into her. Like anybody that votes for her, I start to question their ethics.
Yeah, you know, and this election, at least on the Democratic side so far, and I guess into the general, it's being decided by people. And I can't remember who I was talking to the other day about this, but it's basically being decided by older voters who are gonna, if they're Democrats, they're gonna vote Democratic no matter what. You know, it doesn't matter if Hitler was running as a Democrat, like literally they would vote for that guy because that's what they know and that's what they've been doing for so long, and nothing's gonna change that. And
they're also on that note, I don't mean to interrupt, but on that note, they're not only taught to kind of vote party line, but they're really taught that the other party is the enemy. I mean, I think that's a really big part of that whole sticking to the party paradigm. Is it's not necessarily so much about sticking with the party that you were brought up in, but it's the other is, you know, evil.
And how ironic that both branches of the government consider us the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
One of my late step grandparents was a public sector worker, part of a union and stuff. And I remember one time seeing on her refrigerator there was like this flyer that I don't know if she got it at work or in the mail or what, but it was like, don't buy GOP scare tactics, blah blah blah, vote for Democrat, this, that, and the other. And exactly, I mean, it's divide and conquer. It's like, oh, if you're Republican, then the Democrats are the problem, and if you're a Democrat, then the Republicans are the problem. And I'm kind of over here agreeing with both sides. It's like, yeah, the Republicans and the Democrats are the problem. But yeah, it's pretty interesting the way that they've used their propaganda to divide and conquer the country. And it's really sad to see so many people buy into it, but I hate to say it, but it's the older folks that make up the voting majority, and they're pretty much solidly in their, you know, in their parties. And if Trump's the nominee for the Republicans, well, 95% of those people that are Republican that normally vote are going to go out and vote for Trump, even if they don't like the guy.
You know what's mind-boggling, Nick, too, about the so-called differences of the political parties? They're always over issues the government should have no say in anyway.
Yeah, it's a lot of – many, many times it's like the wedge social issues, right? Abortion, gay marriage, stuff that, like you said, shouldn't be in the government's business. Abortion is a health issue. Gay marriage is a personal choice, personal issue. The government should be regulating that stuff anyway.
If it doesn't hurt somebody else, why is there ever a law for it at all?
Good point, man. Good point. And that's the thing. When it comes to like the issues that really do make a difference here, And I want to invoke this 28-page report, the 9/11 truth bill, whatever you want to call this thing. I wrote a report on it earlier this month, and the very opening line talks about finally how we got some bipartisanship up there in Congress and in the executive branch. Obama agrees and the Republicans agree that, hey, the Americans don't need to know the truth about what went on 9/11, who was behind it. It's like, wait, I thought you guys hated each other. You guys disagree on these bathroom things and you disagree on this marriage stuff. But when it comes to like foreign policy, toppling foreign governments, invasions of other countries, it's like, oh yeah, we agree on all that stuff. I mean, big deal. But God, these bathrooms, we really got to fight about this thing. And it's like, dude, anybody sitting back and can take like a little bit of an objective view just can see how ridiculous this shit really has become. It's absolutely sickening, dude. It's God, and people buy into it so much too.
But remember, they're uniting over the fact that they don't want to pass the immunity or to remove the immunity from governments taking responsibility for terrorism, supposedly on American soil. But the real reason for this is that there could very easily be the reverse done to the U.S., where the U.S. would have to be held responsible for all of its, you know, acts of terroristic activity or terrorism in general all around the world for time immemorial. So, I mean, they're really basically saying, no, protect our empire more than they're doing anything. And, you know, of course they're going to unite on that.
Exactly. And how many countries have we, like, meddled in for the past, like, half century? Like,
we've created the new axis. Do you guys understand, like, when all this shit comes out, it's us, the UK, Israel, and Saudi Arabia against the rest of the world?
Yep.
We are the new axis.
You are definitely right about that.
Well, we're the good guys, right, DB?
Dude, were the Nazis the good guys? I mean, where does history start fucking you in your ass, you know?
If you live under, if you were a German in Nazi Germany, then the Nazis were the good guys, right?
Right. And Judea declared war on Germany in 1933. And Judea was a culture and it was an ideology. So it'd be like saying Uncle Sam and capitalism declare war on Iran. You're patriotic, aren't you? I mean, that's what it was, man. It was just done as an ideological expression. It was that fucking stupid.
Yeah, dude. And, you know, we got a big empire. And like Claire said, that's why they don't want to allow this bill to pass. It's not about, oh, Saudi Arabia, a few of their loose cannon government, you know, princes or whatever helped finance the 9/11 attacks. That's not really what this big controversy is about and why there is now bipartisanship to oppose this stuff. It's because if attached to this bill that would make those 28 pages unclassified is the ability to lose sovereign immunity, which would allow the families of 9/11 victims to sue, you know, most likely Saudi Arabia, who would be found to be responsible for the funding and stuff. As Claire mentioned, it would open the United States up to being sued from other governments. And we've done so many deeds around the world. I mean, Hillary Clinton personally is responsible for several of them, including maybe more recently Libya and Honduras, where she has basically signed off on military coups or overthrowing governments. These countries would possibly be able to sue us for toppling their governments and stuff like that, and they don't want that.
I don't. You know that I am not a conspiracy-minded sort of tinfoil hat-wearing person. I'm just not. But, you know, lifting that sovereign immunity would also open up the U.S. to be sued for its responsibility in 9/11, in that if it is covering for Saudi Arabia and has been this whole time, there is definite complicity there. I think that's worth mentioning here.
I've also read into this on a completely dualistic note in saying that the dead soldiers from our own military sent to do the bidding of an illegal war on false pretenses, their families can sue. That's ridiculous. And that's a lawsuit of how many hundreds of thousands?
That would be huge too, man. That would be huge. I mean, that's crazy. I didn't even think about that.
I could sue. You know what I mean? Like, you could sue. Do we know anybody that died in a war for this country?
I think a lot of people do. you know, and you know, many, many times has there been, whether it's started on false pretenses or lies or just bad logic.
There's never been a declaration of war since World War II. So think about that. There's no legality to any single conflict since.
Yeah, there isn't. You know, and that's very much worth noting. And all this foreign policy stuff, it's extrajudicial, man. And again, it's like, hey, everybody, you know, everyone I know, all the people that hang out with me, all my friends, everyone on the line tonight, everybody listening, we're held to a certain standard of you know, law and order, where if we do something wrong and we get caught, we're going to be, you know, put to trial, or, you know, there's going to be some kind of repercussions. When these guys literally wage wars that aren't even legal, and millions of people die, it's like, no big deal. You know, it's like, where's the consistency there? I mean, when are we going to start, like, actually holding people accountable for the shit they do? I mean, everybody, you know, people in certain states get caught smoking weed, they get held accountable because it's illegal, right? But people go and do these, like, awful, awful things, and
if,
it's like,
if you're rich, your corporation just pays a fine, and it frees your person.
Yeah, you know, the 2000, you know, the housing crisis, the financial crisis, all those crimes, you know, all the people that lost their house, lives destroyed, nobody went to jail. I mean, yeah, dude.
There's a massive shifting of blame. Like, I don't know when it happened, but it seems like the entire country has decided to blame other people for anything and won't take responsibility for anything they do. And I think it's led by the government. And this is a prime example of that. I mean, by not allowing the victims to pursue justice because they're covering their asses, it's a shifting of blame. It's saying, no, we can't possibly take responsibility for what we've done. Oh, my gosh, Madam, what would happen if we did that? I mean, it's kind of chronic right now.
There are global reparations on a war level and on an environmental level for everyone. Everyone's been affected by the evil empires of the whole world and all the evil corporations and governments. They don't want to open. If they open this little inch, it'll go a whole mile. It'll just rip it all apart. I mean, yep. We're all due. We're all due probably millions of dollars. And you can trace it back to basically a handful of families dictating everything through essentially money magic and just fake debt. And that's how it's been going for thousands of years, man. It's the same freaking people. And they need to be sued.
Accountability, dude. You know, and that's what we're lacking here. And that's, you know, again, that's what's driving this anti-establishment attitude out there right now, is people seeking accountability. And can you blame them? I mean, shit. It's ridiculous. Everybody knows someone that's been locked up for some kind of petty crime or some infraction, or had to pay a fine for this, that, and the other. But these assholes get away with everything, and they're never held accountable. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it is.
So, politics aside, no, I'm just kidding. moving on here, because this election stuff, dude, it'll frustrate the hell out of you, especially if you're supporting Bernie Sanders. And I feel bad for the people out there that were.
Especially if you didn't think it wasn't if you didn't know it was rigged.
Yeah,
there's a lot of people that are getting heartbroken right now.
Yeah, there's a new report out. I'm trying to remember. I think I'm going to write about it, because this is something that I wrote about just a couple weeks ago. Before this new poll came out. You know, people on a very, very, very large scale now are starting to understand that maybe that the system that we're dealing with here is rigged. There is a new poll. Let me see. Reading from Reuters here. I'm going to be covering this probably tomorrow sometime. So Reuters conducted a poll, and it found that 47.2% of people agreed that the current system of presidential primaries and caucuses are rigged against some candidates. So basically what you have here for probably the first time in, I don't know, maybe ever, is basically half of the people in this country now believe that the voting system to pick the president is a rigged system. And I wrote about this pretty in-depth a couple weeks ago. It was probably like our most viral story of the month on the anti-media. But, you know, the Sanders and the Trump campaign have basically laid bare a lot of the flaws in the quote-unquote election system here, where on the Democratic side, you got super delegates and you got,
weird rules, and you got the Democratic National Committee basically in bed with certain candidates that are considered establishment by, you know, obviously I'm talking about Hillary Clinton, and they were trying to put Sanders down like the whole time. And Claire wrote a very in-depth article about all the instances of electoral, you know, at least questionable electoral practices and maybe up to fraud going on in pretty much almost every election and all throughout Iowa, Super Tuesday. And then on the Republican side, you got the Republican Party trying to stop Trump, which seems to have pretty much failed. But in Colorado, I mean, for example, they basically just canceled the voting outright and then just gave the delegates over to Cruz. I mean, people – now half the people in the country believe this, that it's rigged. And so this is big. I mean, this is huge. This is going to change a lot of things. I mean, it's going to force reform, and I don't know how this reform is going to manifest itself, but – something's going to have to change here, or people are going to be really, really upset with this system. And I mean, they already are, you know. And so, I mean, what do you guys make of this? What are the repercussions from this 2016 primary, and how do you think it'll change the direction of the country? I mean, Claire, what do you think?
I really strongly feel like this election is going to be when things start to really fall apart. It seems as if whoever ends up, you know, actually winning the White House is going to make somebody furious, some large group of people, because you have two very non-traditional candidates running with extreme popularity, and they're both pretty much getting screwed. And, you know, Trump a little bit less right now. It looks like he actually might win the nomination. But at the same time, if he doesn't win the presidency, those people are not going to be happy. And it just seems to me, from everything that I've been reading and from all of this fraud that I looked into for this article and stuff, people are just not going to take it anymore. I think that this might be the last straw.
DB, what do you think, man?
Yeah, I mean, I'll take it even a kind of a logical step further, which is that the Democratic Party will split and have a Progressive Party, and the Republican Party is going to split and have a Conservative Party come out. I think we're going to become a four-party system just out of sheer freaking mass of people that are just completely angry and over it and don't want to play ball with any of the establishment anymore. Basically anybody under, I would say 60. I mean, anybody that's been inoculated with the internet from a pretty much formulative year. So I don't know, say you get a hold of the internet in your 40s and it changes your opinions and now you're in your 60s. You can be in that, you know, bubble where people want to see change and are just pissed off enough. And it's naturally logical that people that are a bit older and still watch TV and read the newspaper and have pensions especially don't want to see any of the socialist policies or any of the freewheeling of things like Trump, man. And that's just what it comes down to, is it's all logical in a way.
It's going to be interesting to see, and maybe even the Libertarians and the Greens can pull their resources together and turn it into a five-party system and get a little more of a European flair to what's going on.
I hope they co-opt the Progressive Party with. I hope they can just convince Bernie to be part of it and just bridge it over. And everybody, you know, under that 68, you know, 60, 55 to 60 age threshold from the Democrats is just going to come roll over because they want to see change.
Yeah, man. And, you know, for that, there's hope. There's definitely hope out there. I mean, what are we going to do about this, you know, acknowledgement that it's rigged? I mean, are people going to sit back and go, whatever, you know, like, it's rigged, you know, that's just how it's going to be.
Yeah, whatever, I'll pay 65% tax and get nothing for it, yeah.
For real, right? So I guess, you know, we're going to have to see how it plays out. I mean, I think that people should work, I guess, you know, there's going to be people inevitably working within the system, and I think that it's also effective for people to work outside the system, and that's how we can discredit the whole thing, man, and maybe usher in a new era where we can, you know, do things a different way and get back to more self-governorship or something like that, man. I mean, having this big, strong federal government telling, you know, a quarter of a billion people what to do, it just doesn't make sense, you know.
And it's got to be like a billion people, though. Like, how much landmass do we control? Like, seriously, what countries do we just completely have under our thumb? Like, half the world?
A lot. Yeah, a lot. We've got over 1,000 military installations in over 100 countries. So it's a lot, man. I mean, there's no telling.
I mean, we own most of we own every country in South America except for Argentina and Brazil, only because they're just big enough to resist barely. But we own the rest. We own Australia. We own New Zealand. We own, well, the UK, whatever. We're symbiotic. I mean, we own Canada. Dude, we must have like 2 billion people under the sway.
The sun never sets on the American Empire, eh? The old saying from the British Empire. But we've replaced them, right? We've replaced the British Empire. And now the U.S. has a new empire. It's not the kind that we're so used to back in the day. Not in many ways it's not. But, I mean, in Iraq and Afghanistan, it is still like those old empires where we actually have, like, occupying armies there and, like, you know, putting in puppet governments and stuff. But we have a more unorthodox, a new school corporate empire where we have like corporate bidding and it's like a crony capitalist empire that we have going on. And it's kind of a new prospect. It's a new thing, and people are still trying to understand how to deal with it, especially the American people, because, you know, the old people, the old empires, it used to be where like you would share in the spoils of war, and maybe the baby boomers did, you know. Maybe the baby boomers did share in those spoils, but
they did, but I mean, God,
weren't. You know what I mean? We're getting, as we talked about earlier in the show, it's like we're getting less pay, we're earning less, we're getting more debts, and everything costs a lot more, you know. So we're not benefiting from this empire anymore, and so people are finally getting fed up with it. I think, you know, post World War II, people were like kind of okay with it, and then, you know, for like 15, 20 years, it was like, okay, yeah, we can put up with this. And then the 60s come along, and it's like, oh shit, maybe we don't want to put up with this, because now they're drafting our people and sending them into Vietnam to go die. And all of a sudden, people are like, oh shit, maybe this isn't a good idea. Maybe just because we are raking in the billions and everyone's got a good standard of living, we still don't want to lose our kids and our brothers and our uncles to the Vietnam War, you know. And so people started, you know, questioning that, and then that's when the drug war came about. And, you know, as we talked about recently on the anti-media, the drug war was created to put a, you know, to break the anti-war movement. And, you know, it's just
that's commie thinking, Nick.
Yeah, there you go. Apparently it's a very tough subject to get around, but you know, people need to start wholly and fully rejecting this empire. And I hate to break it to you, but voting Republican or Democrat, you know, you're supporting that system. And maybe not voting for one of them would be a much more your voice is heard louder, you know, because if you're voting for Hillary because you don't want Trump to win, I mean, and then if Hillary wins, it's like, well, dude, you've just sealed the deal. You know, you've extended the empire. You've just made it last 8 more years, and, you know,
Nick, validating the system that's already broken beyond repair.
Yeah,
Nick, can you run for mayor of Chula Vista, dude? I'll come back and be your lieutenant governor.
Yeah,
that's how you're gonna crush the shit out of this empire, dude. Just taking it back city by city.
As long as I get those super delegates, man.
Yeah, because think about it. If we could find a way to circumvent whatever we need federal funding for, which is like what, roads and what? The military bases so they can move out, whatever. As long as we have private gun ownership, no one's going to invade California. And then we have the 10th economy in the world. I mean, there's ways to circumvent this federal empire. Just get rid of the federal power.
That's, yeah, man, that's what we got to do. And, you know, I'm not a politician myself, and I wouldn't run for mayor, but, you know, I wouldn't be opposed to getting
treasurer.
No, not that. Maybe I could be the city propagandist or something. No. No, but you know, you're right though, man. Like, we need to start decentralizing our governorship and experimenting with new ways of doing it and new ways of ordering our society, because obviously this old way of national republicanism or whatever you want to call it, it's turned into kind of a oligarchy or a plutocracy, corporatocracy, whatever you want to call this damn shit that we're now dealing
with. It is an oligarchy, because it's like, isn't there like 40, there's 40 billionaires on paper that are worth like 50% of the whole population. And then they're controlled by banking families who are all in trust, so they don't have to disclose what they own, but it's in the trillions. So
that's why I really think the best way to describe the system as it is right now is a corporatist plutocracy. I think that's like really what makes sense. No matter what, though, it does not work for the people, no matter what you want to call it.
Exactly. And just the bigger the bureaucracy gets, the more centralized it gets, the less representation that we have as a person. You know, if I go and throw a vote out there for some asshole in Congress, I mean, he's gonna sit here and tell me one thing to my face, and then he's gonna get up there and he's gonna go start a new war, or he's gonna go do some dumb shit that I don't agree with. You know, and this federal system and putting your vote into it, it just validates it. I mean, we gotta break it down and go back to the local level. If you're gonna have government, it should be at the county level at the biggest. You know what I mean? And You know,
it's the craziest thing is, like, you'll have a job where you make like $30,000 or $40,000 a year working for a company, and they'll require a bachelor's, but you don't need one to be in the U.S. House of Representatives or even a senator. That's ridiculous. You have all these unqualified asshats that get in for one term, make $174,000 a year, and then get a freaking pension for serving for 2 years. They make like 60. Yeah, well, do you add that, or they still make this like $60,000 a year for the rest of their life for a 2-year term? So it's like, man, I want to get in there and make $60,000 a year for the rest of my life for doing nothing, for just serving 2 crappy years. And that's what happens, man, is you get these cults of personalities that develop for one term. These guys get in, they do everything they're told to do, and then they're out, and they don't care because they're so-called set for life.
And even worse, they go in there, and then they're in there for life. And then they're corrupt. They just sit there and corrupt the process forever. And then they have, like, you know, Congress is down to, what, a 9% approval rating or lower. They got 90% reelection rates. I mean, it's ridiculous. Like, what in the hell are people thinking? You know what I'm saying? Like,
are people even voting anymore in reality, or is it just all, like, automated? Or,
I mean, it might as well be, because these just mindless drones that are going out to the voting polls, that I hate to say, these older generation people that are going to vote Democrat no matter what. I mean, think of it like this. Think of it like this. Let's say there was a congressional race in where you live and you got to vote in it. And it comes down to Hillary Clinton versus Bernie Sanders. And let's just say it's a congressional race. If you're one of these mindless drones that's out there voting, And the Democratic Party tells you, hey, we want you to vote for Hillary Clinton. Well, guess what? That's what most likely what you're going to do, unless you're a young person and you're actually going out there and doing research and saying, oh, hell, Hillary Clinton is awful and Bernie Sanders isn't, compared to her, isn't so bad. Well, shit, maybe I'll change my vote. That's not what's happening, though, man. It's these parties are so ingrained, and they're so entrenched in the political system that it doesn't matter that if there's a popular rebellion within that party. I mean, that party is still going to maintain its status quo because it's already got these other people that are propagated and completely brainwashed to fall right in line, and they'll do whatever the hell they're told.
I saw a really interesting question on passed through my newsfeed the other day. Somebody actually asked, what does Hillary Clinton actually stand for? Because that really is kind of a baffling, perplexing question. It's more like she stands for the bankers profit and stuff, but she doesn't actually have any real party stances.
She stands for income inequality. Now, I don't know which side of that equation she stands on, but she stands for it. I don't know if she's for income inequality or against it, but she stands for income inequality. And she stands for gender equality as of like a couple years ago, at least. You know, so it's hard to say, man. I mean, it's who is Hillary Clinton? What does she stand for? She's a chameleon. She's a snake. She slithers and she blows in with the wind. And she goes this way and that way.
Doesn't stand for Bill's dong.
No, she doesn't. And it probably doesn't stand for her either, unfortunately. But, oh, man. But I'll tell you what, man. And that's why she's a perfect politician. That's why she's such a great Democrat, is that that's what they want. They don't want someone that's going to be principled, that's going to stand up for some and say, you know what, hey, I'm not going to start wars that aren't needed. I'm not going to, you know, tax poor people because they shouldn't be taxed. She's gonna do whatever in the hell they want her to do, and every 4 years she's gonna come up and tell you what you want to hear. That's Hillary Clinton. That's what she stands for.
Just tell everybody that asks, what is Hillary Clinton? She's an old school Democrat, as in the 1860s, as in she wanted to put everybody that was a freed slave back in Liberia. That's Hillary Clinton.
Seriously, man, and her comments and the stuff she says, I mean, she literally is like pretty much the worst one out there on minorities and in particular black people, and her track record and stuff. I mean, Trump is less bad when it comes to people of color and to, you know, all the issues that affect them and
he's just a New Yorker, dude. He's just a brash idiot and an asshole, but you know, like he's not a racist, I don't think.
No, I mean, he's saying what he's saying because he knows that the general voting Republican believes all that crap, but I don't think Trump himself is that much of a fool. But Clinton really believes that a lot of that stuff, man. She's
a true elitist.
You know, the super predator comments, the crime bill in the 90s that she supported, the remarks that she's made recently on the campaign trail. I mean, God, she is just so bad, and I just don't get how people can support what she does and what she says, but they are, man. And you know what? She's probably, you know, I don't want to say for sure, but there's a good, very good chance she becomes the next president. She beats Trump. And we're going to be stuck with that, dude. And, you know, Trump would be a better president only because he would have opposition. You know, he can't even give speeches without being interrupted by protesters. And Clinton does not attract that kind of opposition because she works with both sides of the spectrum. She works with the Republicans to, I don't know, start a war with Iran, which would be a good possibility if she became president. You know, and so she's much more dangerous because she would actually cut these deals with the Republicans and they do all the bad things. And like we mentioned earlier in the show, the Republicans and Democrats can't agree on these fucking bathrooms. But when it comes to not letting people know who actually attacked us on 9/11, it's like, yeah, we agree with that kind of stuff. That's Hillary Clinton. That's who she is. That's what she would do. You know what I'm saying? She would fight to the teeth for those bathrooms and stuff. But when it comes to the 9/11 stuff, if she was a president, she'd be doing the same exact shit Obama's doing right now.
She'd make sure there's a bidet in every stall.
And look how much money she's taken from Saudi Arabia, dude. The Clinton what is it called? The Clinton Initiative? I don't know. The Clinton Foundation. They've taken so much money from Saudi Arabia. It's obscene. So she sits there and talks like she's going to, oh, I'm going to, yeah, I want to hold Saudi Arabia accountable for 9/11. Bullshit. I don't believe a damn word of it, dude. It's all bullshit. No, no.
Yeah, and all the money's in Delaware. Yeah.
So are we going to invade Saudi Arabia soon and bring them democracy?
Probably.
I think so. No, actually, no, because they're pivoting away from the oil stuff. And so they're no longer. Well, and this is why all this stuff is even being allowed to talk about right now. The 28 pages. Well, it's no coincidence that all this news about Saudi Arabia and how awful they are has been permeating through the seams this past year. It's because we're getting ready to sever that tie, man. And that's why we cut the deal with Iran, because we're pivoting away from Saudi Arabia because the petrodollar. You know, we're all everyone. The writing is on the wall, man. The petrodollar is out the window pretty soon. The fossil fuel industry is on the ropes. You know, the petrodollar is going to be replaced by something else. I don't know what it's going to be, but it's going to be something else. You know, so keep an eye on that. Keep an eye on these elections. Anti-media radio. Yo, here we go. Go through the stereo.